Let's say your small business has a problem. Like maybe one of your doggy daycare customers had an accident. You might say something like,
doggone it!
Hi, Chihuahua!
Holy schnauzers!
But if you need someone who can actually help, just say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And get help filing a claim from your local State Farm agent. For your small business insurance needs, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Now's the time to save 30% on wedding jewelry, only on BlueNile.com. Make sure your wedding ring is the one with your pick of diamond and lab-grown diamond bands, all hand-finished and graded for excellence. Or surprise her with something blue she'll love for life, like a stunning pair of sapphire earrings. Blue Nile's jewelry experts are available 24/7 to help, from fit questions to style advice. Right now, get up to 30% off at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast, now part of the Believe Network, guys. Great to have you with us. Joining me is my co-host, Stephen Kirk, 65 plus years in sports journalism between the two of us. Later in the show, I got five shocking Astros stats as we're nearly at the one-third mark of the season. But I want to start with the latest report from The Athletic's Kelly Eco that the Rockets have followed the Donovan Mitchell situation now for months. And Stephen, from all reports, the Cavs are breaking up Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. So either Mitchell signs an extension and they trade Garland, or Mitchell's on the block.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation because from what I understand, they don't want to keep those two together. So one of them is going to stay and the other is probably going to go, which is certainly interesting. I've been hearing these reports about Donovan Mitchell for a while. I think David Windhorst talked about it on a podcast. And as you said, Kelly Eco reported on it. You know, there's got to be some truth to it. I mean, it's interesting, though, because, again, you know, with Donovan Mitchell being on the last year of his contract, he'll be an unrestricted free agent after next season. If you're the Rockets, you know, first of all, how much would you want to give up for a guy that is obviously going to command big money when he does become a free agent and could walk? And the other is, where does Jalen Green fit into this picture?
You don't make the deal, though, if there's not some sort of wink, wink. You're not giving up major assets.
No,
there's a wink,
you certainly shouldn't.
Yeah, right. But you're going to re-sign the guy.
Right. But, you know, then the question becomes, what happens with Jalen Green?
Yeah. And let me speak to just the fact that, because I hear a lot of Rockets fans just dismissing Donovan Mitchell outright because they're scared to death to give up potentially one or two players from the core six. But, Stephen, if you have a chance to get a top 15 player who's in his prime, only 28 years old next year, and add him to, let's say, four of this core six, you have to do it. You want four other reasons I would trade for Donovan Mitchell? Are you ready, Stephen?
Go ahead. Fire away.
Yeah, I created a list. Number one, there is no guarantee any of these core six reach top 10 or 15. The odds are against it. Hell, if you want to bet me one of those Rockets become better than Donovan, let me know. I'll take your money. And Shangoon, by the way, may have the best shot, but I'm not doing the deal if he's included. I think neither are the Rockets.
No, definitely not. No. No, you might include Jalen Green in that deal, but you certainly wouldn't include Shangoon.
Number two, Donovan Mitchell's never had an offensive weapon close to Shangoon. And yet in his last four seasons, without really a great offensive weapon next to him, he's led his teams to an average of 50 wins. What could he do with this kind of help with Shangoon? Number three, Donovan's clutch. Stephen, he's sixth all-time in playoff scoring. His overall shooting percentage better in the playoffs than in the regular season. This is the anti-James Harden.
Yeah, that's the funny thing you said that. The first thought that popped into my mind as well, that's definitely not James Harden figures.
Yeah, number four and my last one, Rockets fans say, but he's not a top five guy. So he can't win a title with Donovan Mitchell is the number one guy. I say it's not written on Mount Sinai that you need him to be number one, but at worst, he's a great number two. And hopefully maybe one of the remaining core six that you don't deal turns into that number one option. And by the way, Stephen, where are the MVP candidates in this year's Final Four? Where's Jokic? Where's SGA?
Yep.
Where's Giannis? Only Luka is still alive. Isn't the goal to get as many high-end talent guys as possible? I say you can't twiddle your thumbs waiting for years for a top five player to magically become available.
Yeah, in today's NBA, that's just where it's going, Robert, and it's just the reality of it. And I mean, there are a lot of things about Donovan's game that I like. And, you know, I certainly don't think he would have a problem fitting in with the core six, you know, with the Rockets. You know, the question, though, is if you're going to make a trade for him, you know, sure, you've got a high draft pick you could probably throw in there, but they're going to want a major piece too, or at least to some degree. So then the question becomes, who are you willing to part with from a player standpoint to get him?
Yeah, Brian Windhorst brought up this package, which seems realistic as far as an ask. He said, Jalen, Jabari, and that whole Nets draft pick package for Mitchell, I'd consider it, but if you're giving up Jalen, you take one or two of the Nets picks from that package off the table. So maybe you give up two or three of them instead of all four. And then Jabari, you know, for him, I just don't think he looks like a star to me. So he's the easiest to give up. Also, important to note, you'd probably want to move Van Vliet in a separate trade because Mitchell and Van Vliet, real small backcourt. Cavs wouldn't want Van Vliet because they already have Garland. So that'd be going against everything that they just tried to trade with Mitchell because they were dealing with the Donovan and Garland situation as defensive liabilities there in the backcourt. Steven, would you do the Jalen, Jabari, and the Nets draft pick package?
If somehow, as you said, wink, wink, you could get him to sign a longer-term deal because, again, you're taking the risk of him walking next year and you don't have Jalen Green. Well, guess what? You've lost both of those guys. So then where are you as far as your core six? Now, you know, if this draft class were a huge draft class like some of the previous seasons, I might be willing to take that chance. But since it isn't, yeah, I don't know. That package may be a little steep unless I could be assured that you can sign him beyond next season. And obviously there's no guarantees with that. So that would be my only hesitation about the deal.
We have seen Jalen Green at his best in March, but we've seen 3 years of Jalen Green outside of that 1 month in March be a poor shooter and somebody that doesn't always bring it on a nightly basis. Now, you know, I'm not going to give up on Jalen Green, but if it's between the sure thing of a top 15 guy and Jalen Green, I mean, you got to take the sure thing typically in life. And, you know, Jalen, I love the potential. I love what he can do. We've seen the high end, but we've seen it. Guys have great months, Jeremy Lin, and just like not having another career, you know, it's just, it's not a whole thing.
Well, you know what, if the Rockets are in a win now situation, which, you know, let's think about this for a minute. They almost made the playoffs. And if they had continued to play the way they were playing until almost right up at the end, they would have been in, and Lord only knows how far they would have gotten if they had gotten on a roll like they did. So if they are playing to win now, then yes, you do make the deal because somebody like Donovan Mitchell could get you over the top. Now, you were talking about Fred VanVleet in a separate deal. What about, since this seems to be happening more and more lately, what if it were a three-team trade where another team got involved, you sent VanVleet elsewhere, you still get Donovan Mitchell, maybe even get another piece from that team or, you know, another draft pick or two out of that situation? That wouldn't be too far-fetched to think about either, would it?
Yeah, I thought about, you know, he could be involved with a third team or something like that. It gets complicated because you're trying to – the Cleveland needs you to somehow get close to matching, and if you're just giving them, you know, Jabari and Jalen, it's not going to match salary-wise with Donovan Mitchell. So it gets a little bit trickier, but, yeah, I can see a three-way deal. I mean, say you make the deal. How would you feel, Stephen, about a starting lineup of Donovan Mitchell, Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, Dylan Brooks, and Şengün?
Oh, I would love that lineup. Yeah, you would have me there. You would absolutely have me there. You know, it provided, of course, Şengün comes back strong from his injury and Tari comes back strong from his. You know, those are factors to think about. But, man, if you're thinking best case scenario, oh, yeah, give me that lineup any day.
Yeah, and you still got Cam Whitmore coming off the
bench. Right, you've still got Cam Whitmore. And you know, again, who else – they might do in the offseason or the draft pick that they may or may not make or trade. I mean, there's still some factors that kind of make this even more appealing in there.
Yeah, the draft pick, I would assume that's going to go in a Donovan Mitchell
trade. Yeah, I was going to say, the Cavaliers are going to want draft assets, and the pick they would be eyeing, I'm sure, because most teams would, if they're not already up there, that number three pick would be there.
Yeah, you could still get guys in free agency. You still got Steven Adams, by the way, coming off the bench too.
Right.
And depending on, you know, salary filler and what you need, you know, either Jock Landale, if he doesn't go, he stays. Same with Jeff Green, same with Jayshon Tate. So you've got some other potential pieces there. But, I mean, Steven, just my last thought on it is, you know, I seriously mull it over. I am not right there with Jalen Green seeing what he is and who he is. So it would help a lot if I knew the character of Jalen Green a little bit better than just what I see on TV. But look, I mean, if they have any question about Jalen Green becoming a star, then you definitely have to think about this. But if not, Jalen Green, he becomes a star. He's cheaper than Donovan Mitchell because the fund max that he'll be on, that you'll sign him in a year, will be much cheaper than Donovan.
Yeah, I wish we had a bigger sample size of the Jalen Green that we saw from March on than we do. Because if we did, you know, if he were doing this, if he were going up and up and up and up over these last 3 years, it would make that decision a lot harder. But that's the thing, is you still don't know what Jalen Green you're going to get from year to year. But if you're talking about a guy like Donovan Mitchell, the more you think about it, the better it sounds. And if you have to give up a guy like Jalen, even if it's just for next year, you know, who knows who might become available after next year. But again, it's a different kind of a dangerous twist, just because you don't know what's going to happen beyond next year. But if you're in win now mode, and if you're really thinking about it, which the Rockets very well might be, then perhaps that's why you make a deal like that.
Ime was in win now mode this year, Steven.
Well, yeah, one of the things that Ime prided himself on is that he has always made the playoffs every year, whether he's, you know, a player, assistant coach, head coach, until this year. The Rockets actually broke that string. So yeah, he definitely is in win mode now. And he not only wants to get back there next year, but he wants to go deep, especially with the team he has now in his building. You know, give him another year with these guys together and then adding a piece like, say, a Donovan Mitchell or whomever, then definitely he wants to win now.
What do you guys think out there? Let us know. Put a comment down on YouTube about this or what we got going on the rest of the show. Definitely we need you guys to do that.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwood1.
All right, quick reminder for Texans fans. Our last show broke down the new schedule with the Chronicle's Steph Stradley. Steven, you didn't come on with us last week.
No, I wasn't able to. Covering hockey, you know, that's been taking up my life.
Yeah, so, what'd you think?
Well, you know, the positives, Robert, I love the fact that there are 6 primetime games. I actually picked them to have 4, so that actually went above. The downside to that, of course, and I know you guys touched on it, is some of them, you know, kind of appear at a weird time. You know, and you're talking about the game from Saturday to Wednesday, Christmas Day, against Baltimore. You know, that's definitely not a thing that you want to have happen. But you know what? Those are just the things that come when you have a winning season and a great season like what the Texans have. You know, you want to be in prime time. You want the nation to kind of root for you, or at least, you know, be able to see you in action. The downside, though, is that the schedule makers aren't exactly going to be kind to you. and they're going to make it tough on you. I love, love, love the fact that the Texans and Cowboys are playing Monday Night Football. I mean, the only thing that would have been better, Robert, that I was kind of hoping would happen is that they would be on the Thanksgiving Day game, which the Cowboys always are. I was shooting for that. But you know what? Monday night's a great substitute. I will gladly take it because I'll be honest with you. You know, they have some Sunday night games, and that's great. I've just never been a big Sunday night football fan. I just haven't. Monday night, you know, from growing up watching some great Monday night football games, and Robert, you know, and I know, the Oilers were involved in some of those great Monday nighters. So to have the Texans and Cowboys on Monday night football, dude, give it to me. I'll take it. So those are some positives. And, you know, really, the negatives, and I mentioned this in the last podcast, I would have preferred to play Kansas City and Baltimore a little bit earlier just because sometimes, you know, like especially in the Chiefs case, you might be able to knock them off. But, you know, you get what you get. You know, there's one game, I think, that's in October in a cold weather situation that you normally would you would be playing in November, December, where you get them in October. So that's good. I think it's the Green Bay game, wasn't it? That it was in October and not November, which is a good thing. So there are pros and cons. And here's the thing is, you know, we look at a schedule and on paper, it looks tough or it looks easy. But as we know from year to year, Robert, teams are going to go up that you think are going to be down, just like the Texans did last year and vice versa. So there will be some surprises and there will probably be some disappointments. There will probably be some games the Texans we think they should have won and they fell on their face. So it's always interesting to look at it. But the Texans, well, one thing's for sure, the Texans are going to be noticed next year because they have so many primetime games. What is it, one-third of their games? Well, almost, if you're 17 games, but almost one-third of them are going to be on national television.
Absolutely, yeah. It's pretty remarkable after the last few seasons. And if you've dreamed out there as a Texan fan of Steven Nelson resigning, that ain't happening. You put it to bed. In case you missed it this weekend, he took a veiled shot at D'Amico on social media, referenced what D'Amico should have done during the awful storm in Houston as far as helping out on his IG account is where he put that up there. And he said, quote, "Let's go milk dud, man. It's time. It's your time to shine. Damn all that meathead persona. Time to get your hands dirty for the city," unquote. Steven, if you weren't sure he was referring to D'Amico when he said milk dud, man, he had deleted a post that said milk dud Ryans. What an idiot.
Well, you know, he took a pot shot at the general manager last summer. So I guess, you know, he figured he had to, he might as well go all the way and take a pot shot at the coach. Look, Steven Nelson's a good football player, but he's not a superstar. Okay. And, you know, if you are going to continually have that kind of thing going on in the background, does the Texans locker room really need someone like him, especially when they had such a good season? You know, you should be feeling positive about it, dude. Your team just had a good season. They're hoping to have an even better one and go deeper in the playoffs next year. I don't understand what his deal is that he has to continue to do. I mean, this isn't the first time, obviously. So do you really want a guy like Steven Nelson on your football team? Again, I know he's a good player, but you can find somebody else out there, I think, that will do as good a job. He might pay him a little cheaper even, and he certainly may not be running his mouth as much.
Who hates D'Amico Ryans?
Well, that's my other thing. I mean, why, you know, Nick Caserio is one thing. You know, the general manager is all business, but come on. D'Amico Ryans is one of the most popular figures in Houston right now, and he was before the Texans even started playing last year. You're mixing in things, you know, with a storm that just happened. And by the way, you know, for those of you living in Houston, I live in Austin, but I'm from Houston, so it's very close to my heart. I hope that, you know, many of you have gotten power back, and if you haven't, hang in there. But, you know, mixing the two together like that and just taking a pot shot at D'Amico, I just don't understand it.
It's unreal. I almost feel like maybe he's got a drinking problem or something. I mean, I don't want to defame the guy, but something weird is going on where you basically take a pot shot at your general manager to begin with last year, and then the team that signed you and started you, and now you're like a free agent still in June.
Yeah, still in June. Let's talk about that for a second. That's a key phrase right there. It's still June, and nobody has signed him. Do you think that other teams maybe are noticing the personality of this guy? Maybe that's one of the reasons that he hasn't signed with anybody, including the Texans.
all anybody has done the last few months, Stephen, is praise this franchise. It's just crazy. It's remarkable that he did that.
Well, especially, you know, coming from one of your own players, that's a very disturbing thing. And I'm sure the Texans brass, while they may not be saying it publicly, they are not the least bit happy of that. And if they were still sniffing around the possibility of re-signing Steven Nelson, well, that might have just been the nail in the coffin against it, as you said.
Yeah, this personality is probably why he wasn't re-signed anyway. Let's go to the Astros. Jose Abreu is coming back this weekend. And immediately, as soon as it's announced, he jinxes the team, Steven. They blow a 6-1 lead.
Yeah, that's pretty disturbing. And it's disturbing with anybody on the mound, but especially so when you have Framber Valdez on the mound. But yeah, there's so much unknown with the Jose Abreu thing. I mean, you know, you like to think positive that maybe I honestly thought he would take a little longer being up there. But what has it been, like 3 weeks, almost a month? I guess it doesn't seem that long, but you kind of wonder, was it long enough? Did he need more time? And
Why didn't he get more? He's gotten, like, as you and I are speaking, it's 10 at bats. What's the number one? What's the rush in getting him back?
Yeah.
Why aren't they trying to give him more at bats in the minor leagues for a guy that's just not hitting? You know, he's hitting less than 100. Come on.
Well, that's what I don't quite understand. I mean, he didn't start right away when he got up there. I think there was a few days where he finally reported to the Florida Gulf Coast facility that the Astros have. But yeah, 10 at bats. I don't know what 10 at bats is going to do, even for a guy that, you know, is a former AL MVP and everything. But the struggles he had, they weren't just a couple of weeks. They weren't just a month. I mean, you take out the last part of last season and the postseason. He had most of last season and all of this season so far in the first, 40 plus game. Well, not even that, because he hadn't played all the games now since he was sent down there. That's a lot, Robert. And that's my question is, what's the hurry of bringing him back? John Singleton, while he may not be lighting it up, but he's at least being respectable. He's giving you more out of that position than it had.
Well, the other thing is, and the real concern for me, and this speaks to the job that John Singleton's doing, is Abreu was terrible defensively. He was costing our pitching staff outs. And that to me is what worries me. It's not the three at bats where he strikes out I'm worried about.
Yeah, Jonathan Singleton, he's been decent at first base defensively as well. So when he comes back, not only do you also have Chaz McCormick that was just activated and Trey Cabbage getting sent down. Well, not only do you have that, but when Abreu comes back, I mean, you're really going to have a problem finding playing time for everybody, especially when you're talking about a guy that, you're going to put him back in. Do you have to play him every day to make sure he gets back in game shape and maybe turns things around? Do you bring him in gradually? And is that the best way to do it since he has been struggling? There are just so many questions. I don't know that I would have been in that big of a rush to get him back up, especially considering the way the team is playing right now as a whole.
Yeah, I don't want to be Joe spotted, by the way. What are the comments?
Well, no, it's a good problem to have if you're a manager.
No, it's not a good problem. What do you mean it's a good problem?
Well, it's a good problem that you have so many guys playing well, especially with McCormick coming back. You've got some decisions to make about how much playing time you're going to give who. But yeah, it's going to complicate it even more when
Jose Abreu coming back is not a good problem. It's a terrible problem. It's a terrible thing to put the spot at in. And Stephen, the other part about that is, you're going to have to send somebody away. So maybe it's a guy that's been hitting over 300 for you, given it's the outfield. But I mean, Joey Cooks is doing his job,
Yeah.
And I would prefer not to send him down because he's playing so great and he's got speed and power. Even if he's not playing, he gives you speed and power coming off the bench. I don't know what Jose Abreu is going to bring you off the bench. And also Joey's got a lefty bat. We don't have a lot of those guys, hanging around.
Well, I think you and I both know, or we're pretty certain that this decision was coming from up higher than Joe Espada. I don't know that, maybe I'm sure he has input.
You mean semi-owner Jeff Bagwell?
Yeah, maybe. It could be him. It could be Jim Crane. Because remember, he's getting paid a huge contract, and he's not getting paid, A, to sit on the bench, and B, to be in the Florida Gulf Coast League. So at least from their vantage point, they want him to come back as soon as possible and at least try to earn that money. Now, if he doesn't, well, then, maybe at that point you just have no choice but to eat it and send him on his way. But right now, I'm sure that is the biggest reason that they're in a big hurry to get him back up, is because they want him to earn that dough that they're paying out to him.
Not to be
in the minor leagues.
We know why they want to do it. It's just stupid. They could have waited another couple.
It doesn't mean we have to like it.
Yeah, and another story. Monday, Framber had that 7-run implosion and then admitted he veered from the game plan that inning and shook off Yonner Diaz. Remember, yeah. Steven, when Yonner was going to call all of his own pitches this year, when is that guy going to learn to trust our pitching coaches? Didn't they help him to a championship just like a year and a half ago?
Trust your pitching coaches and trust your catcher. And yeah, we talked about that when we addressed the calling your own pitches thing. Look, I understand, you know, a pitcher's the one throwing the ball and he knows what is comfortable, what's not. But you know what? The catcher also knows what batters are comfortable hitting and what they're not comfortable. And I know that Yonner Diaz is not Martin Maldonado. I mean, duh, it's pretty obvious, but he is your starting catcher and you got to put your trust in him. And look, if Fromber had gotten lit up by accepting all those signs, well, all right, you could point some blame and point some fingers at Yonner Diaz, but that wasn't the case. And I think you have to draw a happy medium there. And Fromber just seems to wanting to go rogue more in this, you know, in spring training and this season than he ever has in the past. And look, the guy needs to become more consistent. And we need to see the Fromber that we saw a couple of years ago. You know, going rogue and shaking off your catcher once, twice, three times isn't going to do it. And that's really the most disturbing thing about it.
As we record Tuesday afternoon, the Astros have played 48 games, basically one third of the season. So what I thought I'd do is go through the five most shocking stats this season. My number one, what if I told you, Steven, that the Astros' four leaders and whip with a minimum of 10 innings, arguably their four best pitchers this year, are Ronald Blanco, Rafael Montero, Taylor Scott, and Seth Martinez?
Well, that actually doesn't surprise me because Montero is actually bouncing back from that horrible year he had last year, and he's earning his money right now. He's had a couple glitches, yes, but compared to last year, my goodness, he's bouncing back. Ronald Blanco, well, that's certainly no surprise. I mean, yeah, the suspension with the whole rosin thing kind of caught us all off guard.
Wait, but you're not surprised now, but you would have been 2 months ago. That's why this is shocking.
Yeah, if you go back to the beginning of the season, all four of those guys you mentioned, sure, that would be a surprise. If you're basing it off that, well, no, I probably wouldn't have given you any of those names when the season started, no. But based on the play right now, well, it should be some other guys. But, Valdez, Javier, those are the guys you would have put up there at the beginning of the season thinking they were going to have bounce back here. So, yeah, and from that standpoint, it is a bit of a shock.
For my number two shocking stat, I want to ask you, Steven, what's Yordan Alvarez's batting average with runners in scoring position as you and I sit here today?
It may not be Jose Abreu-esque, but I bet it's in the 150s or 190s, somewhere in there.
He is hitting 133 with a 470 OPS for his career. Just to give you an idea, Steven, he's a 305 hitter with 1,001 OPS in those situations.
Well, Yordan's whole hitting situation is a puzzle. I mean, that in itself is shocking. You know, never mind the RISP stat. His whole batting average and on-base percentage, slugging percentage, I mean, that is shocking in and of itself. And I don't know what you can point to with a guy like him. Just because we've become so used to his consistency. And when he does get in a slump, I mean, if he goes 0 for 10, you know, in the past, that even that would have been news. So the fact that he's gone this long, it's not only shocking, Robert, it's a bit concerning because you just wonder, what is going on? I mean, is there an injury we don't know about? Has it started to become mental like it can with so many hitters that have prolonged slumps? So, yeah, that is shocking. If you just take that one thing, the 130 batting average with runners in scoring position is shocking, and it's certainly one of the biggest reasons that the Astros have had trouble hitting in those situations.
My number three shocking stat, what if I told you before the year that Jake Meyers would have the second best OPS and fifth best batting average on the Astros? He's hitting 290 with an 885 OPS. Dana Brown said he was the center fielder before the season when nearly every fan thought it was crazy. Oh, why don't we get a center fielder? Why don't we find somebody? He's not the answer. We know that, blah, blah, blah. His hard hit rate is 45.6%, Steven, which is up 18% from last year and 11% for his career. How real is this, do you think?
Well, now that doesn't actually surprise me. And I'm talking about going back before the season started because, and I'm not patting myself on the back, but I actually picked Jake Meyers to have a much better year, to finally break out the kind of Jake Meyers that we saw the small sample size 3 years ago. So really that is one that even at the beginning of the season, if you told me that, I said, yeah, I could see that happening because if anybody really needed to have a good year, it's Jake Meyers simply because, yeah, he's got that thing on his shoulders of being the everyday center fielder. He was basically handed the job by the general manager, not the manager necessarily. So this is something he needed. So the fact that he is coming through with that so far, and yeah, we got a long way to go, but you have to start somewhere. That really does not surprise me, even from spring training.
Yeah, Daniel Brown, everybody was upset with John Singleton. He didn't look too bad. Everybody was upset. Jake Myers in center field. He's been great. And everybody was upset that, you know, he thought Ronel Blanco was great. And I was like, why Ronel Blanco? And now Daniel Brown's looking like, you know, he smelled like a rose, basically.
Well, I guess, you know, you remember how long it took for Framber Valdez, for one thing, to develop. How many times did people say, oh, we should trade Framber. He's not, you know, he's not going to cut it. And they have at least showed that they can have patience with these guys. You know, on most rosters, Forrest Whitley probably wouldn't even be on the team, you know, in the organization, I should say. So I guess it's really not a big surprise. And sometimes, Robert, you know, not everybody develops overnight. In fact, most players really don't. It's probably, I don't have numbers in front of me, but I bet it's fewer than we think. There are just some guys, it takes them a little while. And John Singleton, you know, he's still a bit of a puzzle. I still don't know that he's going to be a superstar quality player.
Oh,
if he could just turn into a capable guy like he is right now, you know, I'd be okay with him even being in a backup role. So, yeah, that's the thing about Dana Brown is sometimes he can spot things. You know, that's why he's in the position he's in. He's been a scout, so he can know some of those things.
Yeah, and as far as John Singleton, I'm just saying, like, everybody hated him as a backup. He's been a solid backup. You can't argue that. You know, he's not this great first baseman, but his OPS is pretty darn good, and he's played good defense, so there's that. And you said – talked about development, how guys develop. Well, that leads me to my number four. Here it is. My number four shocking stat. If I told you before the season, Jeremy Peña would lead all Astros regulars in batting average and be hitting 24 points better than the legend Altuve, we'd be having a celebration, popping champagne. Perhaps he's got more potential as a hitter after watching this, Steven, than Carlos Correa. And Jeremy's hitting 326, 822 OPS. His strikeout percentage, Steven, has gone from 24.2% his rookie year to 13.7% this year. This is all-star stuff.
Yeah, that does surprise me. And I will say that I also picked Jeremy Peña to have a better year at the plate. But I will be honest in saying I didn't expect it to be that big of a leap. You know, I expected him to have more power, which he does have. But to lead the team in hitting, you know, especially, you know, Jose Altuve is having a pretty good season. Okay.
Yes.
But even he's not out hitting Jeremy Peña. So now that is a shocker to me that he has improved that much. And we did hear in the offseason how hard he was working on his swing and changing some things and getting rid of a few things. But look, we hear that about players every offseason. We heard that about Alex Bregman. And, you know, we've talked about that ad nauseum, so I'm not going to go into that. But Jeremy Peña is one guy who is proving that the hard work is paying off to the point where, yes, he actually is shocking us with his much higher batting average and his power.
My number five shocking stat. MLB hitters are hitting 319 off Ryan Pressly. It's not just that his ERA's fallen off a cliff. His batting average for balls in play is 447. Steven, he looks washed.
He looks washed. And, I would say that I'm surprised, Robert, but I just had this, niggling in the back of my mind, you know, just something kind of niggling at me there when the Astros signed Josh Hader, because I knew, you know, obviously Pressly was going to be put back in a different role, a role that, yes, he was, you know, had come accustomed to a few years ago, but something just told me that it would affect his performance. Now, did I think it would be this big of a drop off? No, I would say he would have been maybe had a decent performance. I mean, you know, some bit of a drop of the Pressly that, you know, we're used to seeing. I didn't expect this kind of a drop off, but to think that Pressly was going to be the kind of, you know, shining pitcher that he's been in the closer's role the last couple of years. No, I didn't see that, but yeah, it is a bit surprising that he has just fallen off a cliff. Thinking about how many leads the Astros have blown, you know, Josh Hader's, you know, had to shoulder some of that responsibility too. But Ryan Pressly has been a big reason for that as well.
Yeah, speaking of Josh, fascinating story that just came out. We know by now Hader wouldn't pitch multiple innings before he got to Houston. Apparently back in 2020, when he went to arbitration with Milwaukee, he lost his case because the arbiter did not value non-saves or the multiple inning outings he was pitching. It was then, Steven, that he made a deal. He wouldn't pitch more than one inning and usually wouldn't pitch back-to-backs. So, Steven, it was ex-Astro executive David Stearns who agreed to this deal with Hader. And, you know, Hader just flat out said it. This was about my future and about getting that free agent contract. And frankly, I don't blame him, Stephen, because if they weren't valuing what he was doing in arbitration, then you feel like, okay, then I guess you're going to have to make me what everybody else is in baseball, a one inning reliever that just does that. And I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I have no problem with it either. And, you know, this is what's wrong with arbitration is it's the exact opposite of free agency in the sense that your team is basically going to an independent guy, you know, an arbitrator who probably knows nothing about baseball. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but they're going to him saying, well, he has less value because he did this or he didn't do that. If I were Josh Hader, you know, I got to look out for myself too. I'd be doing the same thing. I absolutely would. So I think a lot of, you know, because that was talked about a lot, Robert, when the Astros signed him and the fact that, well, he's only going to pitch one inning. Well, that's because he said, okay, fine. If you're saying that that's not a big deal, then guess what? I'm not going to put my arm in jeopardy and I'm not going to step forward and pitch more than one inning if that's how you feel about it. I can't blame him at all. So I think that was from the previous regime and it had nothing to do with the Astros. And I think it's being proven by the fact that he's willing to do it now. He's done it, I think, at least a couple of times that I know of.
Any other Astros thoughts that you have? And I guess, you know, we know that Chaz McCormick, it just came out right before you and I started that he's going to be back on the roster and everybody's trying to figure out, well, you got Chaz and you got Jake Myers and Mauricio Dubon and Joey, you got all four guys that can play center and left field along with Yordan, who, you know, is going to be between DH and left. So Stephen, I would say I'm worried about how they're going to mix and match these guys, but I'm not worried because all these guys are hitting well right now, except Chaz, obviously, who's coming off the injury list.
Well, that I think is your X factor is that, you know, Chaz may very well have to play himself back in the lineup just because these guys are doing so well. Now let's remember one thing, Robert, is, you know, the Astros, they've got a long stretch where they don't have any off days again. So it's actually probably a good thing because Joe Espada can give some of these regulars a little more time off and rotate these guys. You know, and if you put Yordan in left field, that opens up a DH spot where you could put someone, you know. So, yeah, it is going to be a problem. And it's going to be a bit stacked. But I'm just thinking that, you know, Chaz was struggling a bit before he went on the IL. And, yes, some of that may have been due to the injury that was kind of nagging at him. But the fact is, these guys have been hitting really well since he's been out. He may be the one that's going to have to play his way back into the lineup on a more regular basis, just considering that.
Yeah, and one of the things I think about, and this is why I'm pissed at Abreu, among many reasons that he's coming back, is, you know, one of the things you could have done is we saw Mauricio Dubon play first recently. I never understood why that wasn't considered more in the mix with the Abreu situation of Dubon playing first base. But I thought, Stephen, maybe, you know, third base situation could kind of be platooning Abreu and Dubon because Abreu and Dubon, Singleton and Dubon,
because
you have a lefty righty situation there, and that allows Dubon to stay in the lineup, and he's been clutch, or at least stay in there fairly regularly when you get Chaz back and you're trying to figure out a spot for Joey and Jake and all these guys. It just gives you the option of like, hey, Dubon can play first base and Singleton, you know, he's been all right, but Dubon has been the best clutch hitter on the Astros this year.
Well, the good thing about Dubon though is he can play so many different positions. I don't think you're going to have that much trouble finding him a spot on the field, if not every day, on most days. I mean, that I think is what saves him. But, you know, when you're talking about guys like Singleton, first base is, you're not going to see him playing the outfield. You're not going to see him playing second, third, or short. And you're certainly not going to see him behind the plate. You know, that's where I think guys' time gets diminished. Now, you know, he could be a good pinch hitter coming off the bench if he can just keep, you know, hitting the way he's been hitting, or at least, you know, be more consistent. But somebody like Dubon, you know, he's going to get his playing time. I mean, look, the guy's hitting home runs, for goodness sake. Who would have thought that? You know, he's a good contact hitter, but even lately, he's starting to put some pop on the ball. So he's going to get his time at bat and time in the field just because he can play so many different positions.
Before I close it out, there's one thing that I forgot to mention. We were talking about the NBA. I said all those MVPs that aren't around in the Final Four, but Stephen, how about this? 14 of the 15 highest paid NBA players are gone. They're not around. You know who the one guy that's in the top 15 highest paid players that's still around? You know who it is?
That's a good question. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to, I'm just going to tell you.
Yeah. I probably don't even know.
Yeah. You would never guess this. You wouldn't think about it, but it's Rudy Gobert. That's the guy.
Well, he's the defensive player of the year, right?
Yeah, well, he's been defensive player of the year multiple times.
Like several times, right. So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's not really surprising, and I guess I should have guessed him.
He's the lead superstar, though, of all of all these type of guys. You know,
if you're talking big three guys, yeah, he's definitely not there. But, yeah, it just goes to show, Robert, that sometimes – I mean, look at LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. I mean, they did win some championships, but they certainly didn't win all the hyped-up number that everybody was thinking they would. And so many other instances where – you know, you're big three guys, or you have so many on one team. I just don't think it's not always going to exceed expectations. And you're talking even certain players. I mean, look at Giannis. He's out again. And it just kind of makes you wonder, you know, Jokic. I mean, there's no question. He's probably the best player in the league right now, arguably. He's not there. But how much of that do you point to the fact of the players you have around you? And that's what I always come back to. You're only five guys on the court in the NBA. That's true. One or two guys can make a difference. But when you get in the playoffs, it's a whole different story. You got to have the guys around you too, as well as coming through yourself.
Yeah, my point, I think, also is that you can't get caught up these days and, okay, we've got to get, you know, three guys or whatever that are just, you know, you mentioned the Miami situation with LeBron, Dwayne, and Bosh. It's just that era might be gone. It looks like right now, yeah, you need superstars to carry your team offensively, but honestly, the way teams are built right now, you want as much depth and as many good players as possible,
right?
Because with injuries and with so much talent in the NBA, if you've got two or three guys on the court that, you know, can't do anything and people can just not even play defensively, then it can be a problem. And we saw that with some of the teams. Like, look at Phoenix. I mean, they had three all-star caliber players, but not much with the rest of that roster.
Well, the biggest problem with that scenario, Robert, is, you know, you pay these guys so much money to be your big three. You don't have enough capital to have the kind of depth that you would need to get into a long playoff run. And I think that's where teams are starting to find out, yeah, it's great to be top heavy. But you know, when you get deeper and deeper in the playoffs, if you go six or seven games each round, depth is an important thing, too. And I think that's what you're seeing now, is that these teams that don't have quite the depth are bowing out. Of course, there's more than one that we're talking about. So somebody's going to go, but it's just, I think that's why you're finding that may not be the way to go now, is that you want to build some depth and some good role players around you, and then have maybe a couple of superstar, a couple of, you know, elite guys to basically lead the team up front.
A reminder, we are part of the Believe Network. Go subscribe to our colleagues with the Believe. Over with Believe on Astros, Jeff Balke is doing a show with Mike Stanton. So you want to check that out. Patrick Creighton, who is a co-host with our friend Sean Bajani over at 610, does Believe in Texans, and he's got Cecil Shorts with him.
Really? No, I didn't know that. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So it's some good stuff out there on the Believe Network. And then LaShar Binkley does a good job with the Rockets, his show. And so, yeah, go subscribe to those. Support the network. Support us. Support us by listening. You can also listen to this. If you're watching us on YouTube, we're on Spotify, Apple, and most of your podcast apps. Thank you for making us a part of your day, as always. And thanks, Stephen. We'll talk to you guys again soon.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43926 7V1.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
The summer fun is just starting at Kings Island, and a Silver Pass puts you at the center of it all season long. Now get unlimited visits through Labor Day for just four payments of $20 after initial payment. Online only, plus applicable taxes and fees. Get unlimited fun with Snoopy and the Beagle Scouts at the new Camp Snoopy, featuring the family boomerang coaster Snoopy Soapbox Racers, plus unlimited splashes at Soak City and free parking. Snag your Silver Pass at visitkingsisland.com. Kings Island, for the fun of it.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.